The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Christian Sager. Robert, the audience probably doesn't know this, but you're a tall person.
I'm reasonably tall. I'm 6'2 or 6'3.
Yeah, you're taller than me and Joe for sure, though. As we found out when we did our photo shoots a couple months ago, we always, and whenever we do the Facebook Lives, we usually end up putting you in the middle, so it's not like this weird lopsided three-headed creature. But yeah, you're definitely taller than the two of us. I'm 5'9", 5'10", depending on, I guess, like how good my day is going.
You know, it's interesting to think about exact heights, because some of the literature we're looking at for this episode, I saw estimations on to what degree men round up their height.
Oh, yeah.
And I find that I tend to round down.
Oh, like, really?
I could make a claim for 6'3".
Yeah.
But I'd rather just be 6'2". Like, I'm calling it at 6'2". It's I bump my head enough at 6'2". if I even think I'm a little bit taller, I feel like I'm just going to have more head injuries.
That's funny, because I do the opposite. I totally round up, because I'm like, you know, when I get the measurement at like the doctor's office or whatever, it's like 5'9¾" or something like that. Like, you know, I'm not totally 5'10", but I just say 5'10 to everybody. That's interesting. Somebody should do a study on that. That would be interesting in relation to what we're going to talk about today. So this is one of those like scientific, I don't know, pastimes that we end up seeing in like our popular media a lot, like especially newspapers, that it's basically like every couple months there's a publication that comes out and it says, well, if you're over this height, like if you're tall, then you're going to live longer. If you're short, you're going to die sooner.
Right.
Right. And then like people read that and they're like, oh my God. And they go out of their minds. They go out and they run for like 2 weeks, and then they're like, it's fine. Whatever.
Well, and then likewise, when it comes to psychology, you'll find studies that are basically saying, oh, well, shorter people that behave like this, taller people behave like this.
Right.
And then we start turning the microscope on ourselves and we're like, oh man, am I like that? Do I have a Napoleon complex, or do I have some sort of like tall person vanity? And, it gets problematic because you end up with these broad generalities, oftentimes supported, especially in the psychology realm, by studies that are maybe not that large and convincing.
Yeah, and so this is how we got on the track for this episode, was one of these studies crossed our desk, and we were like, oh, that's kind of interesting, and it was, we'll mention it later, but it was about height and lung disease, and we were like, let's actually like take a look at like the gamut here and mm-hmm. see like all these studies together, what we actually come down to. Like, what is there anything to this? And if there is it better to be tall or is it better to be short in terms of health and both physical and mental?
Now, I want to touch on just a couple of quick overviews about human height. So over the last 150 years, the average height of people in industrialized nations has increased approximately 10 centimeters, or about 4 inches. And today, the average human height is currently about 5 foot 7 and a half inches for males, or 172 centimeters, and 5 foot 2, or 158 centimeters, for females. This has said 150 years out of all human history. That's a very recent development.
Mm-hmm.
We actually have another episode of Stuff to Blow Your Mind, one I did with Joe a while back, called Colossal, The Science of Human Height. That gets a little more into why humans have grown or have grown taller in the last 150 years, as well as a look at certain gigantism scenarios.
Yeah, so that 150 years or so lines up pretty well with our understanding of why height is related to health. And the basic assumption goes something like this, that it's a combination of your genetic potential and what's referred to as net nutrition. So this is the food you take in, especially during childhood, and how it determines how tall you can grow. But then it's referred to as net nutrition because there's things that can take away from the net, such as disease. So if you have disease in your childhood, that can subtract from your net nutrition, maybe leading to you being a little shorter. So what we're seeing is, like, as our nutrition has gotten better, as the world has become more developed, as wealth is spread around, that's why, especially in the Americas and Europe, there are taller people now. Now, for a long time, historians have used recorded height actually as an indicator of the living standard in both our health and our income. And this is basically because there's not a whole lot of other data available when they're looking at old records, right? It's not like we would have like socioeconomic records of somebody's name written down. But a lot of times they do record their height and their weight. And so this general assumption about people earning more money and then that being connected to health, that's one of the big questions here for us today, I think. I mean, maybe. So there was this instance in China. There was a study found that height does increase as health and survival do in the 20th century. So we're seeing that reflected in China now the same way mm-hmm. we saw it in America and in Europe. This seems to support the idea that adult height is like, quote, a crystal ball that reflects early life conditions such as nutrition and disease. So, you know, maybe there's something to that. But basically, the way we're going to look at it today is, like, what are the meta studies on this, right? Like, has anybody bothered to take a wide lens look at all of these and kind of figure out, like, so what's the truth here or not? And then we're going to zoom in on the ones that are detailed, that are specifically about, like, organs such as like your heart or your lungs or your brain, and like whether or not those are affected by your height.
Yeah, because we, you know, you get into the specifics of all of this and you look at like, okay, who tends to live the longest? And it's based on the information I was looking at yesterday, I believe it's Japanese women tend to live the longest. And the Japanese women do not have a reputation as being just towering physical giants.
Right.
So a lot of this, you know, you deal with the generalities when you break it down. Everybody can name a short person who lived for a long time or a short person who died early.
Mm-hmm.
The same with tall people. And nobody's coming up to a tall person, a short person on the street and saying, oh, why did they not feed you when you were a child? And you will live forever. When you get into, of course, the extremes. When you get into conditions that cause an individual to be, extremely small in stature, or they're suffering from some sort of a gigantism scenario.
Yeah.
Then everything is going to potentially be more out of line. But when we're dealing with sort of the standard realm of human heights, that's where it gets really interesting and difficult to to pull apart.
So let's look at this first theory, which is just the general idea that short people live longer than tall people. Now, we'll go to that example that Robert just mentioned. According to the World Health Organization, Japanese women have the longest average lifespan in the world. They live to be, on average, 86 years old. The average height of a Japanese woman between the ages of 75 and 80 is 149.54 centimeters, or about 4.9 feet tall. So you and I would be towering over these people. We'd be easily a foot or more over them. But they live longer. So for comparison, the average U.S. man, like Robert and myself, lives to be about 75. And in 2012, a study found that shorter men in the U.S. do actually live longer than taller men. So that's one in my column, although I don't know if I qualify as shorter. I'm shorter than you, but I don't know if I'm shorter. And we're going to find this when we look at these studies, that the measurements are all over the place mm-hmm. in terms of like what height they use to measure as tall and above and what height they use as short and lower. But here's the thing. There really isn't a proven direct relationship between height and life expectancy. But there's this idea out there that's connected to the short people live longer theory called the Methuselah gene. Mm-hmm. And this is named after Noah's grandfather in the Bible. He was the oldest man that was listed in the Bible, and he lived to age 969. So apparently none of us get to 1,000, even in the Bible. Now, this Methuselah gene seems to be connected to the idea that short people live longer. And it, basically, it's a rare genetic mutation that decreases the body's cellular use of a particular kind of growth hormone. And those who have it tend to be smaller and live longer. But there are all kinds of factors that could be involved here, right, that aren't just this gene. There could be lifestyle factors, birth weight, early childhood care, nutrition, vaccinations, antibiotics, diet, and income level. All of these things are important. So it's weird that we keep looking to height. And it seems to be that we're doing that because of that historical precedent, right? Just like the basic idea that, well, height is connected to wealth, and subsequently wealth is connected to a good nutritious environment. Therefore, those people will live longer.
Yeah, access to health care as well.
Yeah, exactly. Now, the evolutionary biologist Dr. Armand Leroy discovered the hormone that controls our height, which is called insulin-like growth factor, or we're going to just refer to it as IGF here. And that it controls our height, but it also controls our aging. And so if you have a low level of IGF, this means you're going to have a longer life expectancy, right? Well, in animals, this seems to be true. For instance, smaller dogs live longer than bigger dogs.
This is an example I thought of as being something that even if we're not like directly analyzing it, it's in the background. Like a lot of us tend to know that, oh, you have this giant dog, it might not live as long as this smaller, scrappy mutt.
Yeah, exactly. Like I have friends who have like the like teacup Yorkies, like tiny little dogs, mm-hmm. and they live a long time. And then, like, I guess, I mean, I don't remember what the averages are, but like a big dog, I think, isn't expected to live longer than like a decade, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've known people who've had the like Great Danes. And I think they've all the Great Danes have passed.
Yeah, that's too bad. But here's the other thing. There's another animal that we can look to for this. Mice. And I never even thought about this. But apparently dwarf mice live 75% longer than other mice. Huh. So if we pull that out and we look at humans, right, this idea of the IGF connected to our height and our aging seems to come out to be about, for every extra inch of height, it shortens your life expectancy by an average of 1.2 years. So if you're 6'2 and I'm 5'10, then we got, what, 3-4 inches between us, depending on how we're rounding.
Yeah, or what kind of hats we're wearing.
So according to this, I'm going to live 4.8 years longer than you, maybe, if I don't get hit by a bus on my way out of here. that's kind of part of it, right? It's like you can't really, I mean, that obviously getting hit by a bus can't be factored into your health expectancies, but it's kind of it's not factoring in all those other things like your lifestyle or your diet or whatever, or nutrition. So I'm not entirely convinced that height is a reliable predictor of health. And actually, there was a meta study that was published on this. There's a paper by Angus Deaton that was published in 2006 in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences here in the United States of America. And it indicates that in developing countries, there's an inconsistent relationship between height, health, and income. And he looked at developing countries specifically because of the assumption that it's always been a money connected to nutrition and healthcare factor. Now, his argument after looking at all these studies together is that basically height's an unreliable predictor. For example, he asks why, when he looked at all of the measurements, were African people so tall when they traditionally have a lower income and are exposed to more disease, right? Mm-hmm. So that seems the reverse of what we assume to be true about height and health. In the abstract for his paper, Deaton actually says taller people earn more on average, and they do better on cognitive tests and live longer. So that, again, so we're getting different reports here, right? That his research, the literary review that he went through for his paper was basically that tall people live longer, even though we've got all these other studies that say there's a Methuselah gene and short people live longer. So Deaton says that as a consequence of possible disease and a lack of nutrition earlier in life, the idea is that short people are more prone to chronic disease late in life, and therefore they're more likely to die earlier. But even the increase in heights in Europe and North America are regarded as not being driven by genetics. And this is specifically here in Deaton's paper. But he says it's more about changes in disease and nutritional environments. So, all right, let's back up here. Now we've basically got two competing meta theories, right? We've got the one that says, well, height's totally an unreliable predictor. Here's some data that says people who are tall live longer. And then we've got other studies that say, well, wait, no, shorter people live longer, and there might be this Methuselah gene. So what we did was we basically pulled a bunch of studies for this episode based on health and mental factors, and we're going to kind of go through them and tally up as we go along and see which one of us is going to live longer, Robert or me.
Okay. The great contest here. Okay.
So let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to start off with cancer.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back. We're talking about human height, short people, tall people, shorter people or taller people, I guess you'd say. And just the general question, does one or the other have a leg up on living longer?
Yeah. So unfortunately, we don't have any studies into leg health related to to height. That seems like it would be one of the first ones they'd go to, but I didn't see any cross my radar. We do, however, have a lot on cancer. Now, there has been a link seen between breast cancer in women and height that's been proposed as early as 1975. So we're talking about melanoma, thyroid, kidney, breast, colon, and rectum cancers all being strongly associated with height. And studies have found that women who are 5'10 or more are likely to develop these types of cancers than women who are 5'2 or lower. So again, like as I said earlier, each one of these studies uses a different metric for what tall and short is. In this one, apparently it's 5'10 and 5'2. The explanation basically is that tall women tend to have larger organs and subsequently more cells, so their chance of developing a mutation that leads to cancer is greater, and that this could ultimately be their hormones influencing their risk of cancer.
Okay, so basically the idea is they have more dice to roll, and therefore there's a greater chance they're gonna roll a one on one of those dice.
Yeah, which I'm not sure. I don't know if that lines up with like the math that I remember for like the GRE, but let's go on. We'll see if they've got some more stuff here. One study of this used data from the Women's Health Initiative, which is this study that was, it took like a broad look at women's health between 1993 and 1998 at 40 different clinics across the United States. And even when they introduced controlling factors like body weight, BMI, and socioeconomic status, they found that there was a significant relationship between height and cancer at any site in the body. And for them, they said that for every additional 10 centimeters or 3.94 inches of height that a woman had, she was 1.13 times more likely to have cancer, basically be at risk for cancer overall. They weren't narrowing in on any of these specific cancers. Then Swedish academics just last year backed this up with a study that found that the taller you are, the more likely you are to develop cancer. So for men, they included men here, so it wasn't just, you know, we're looking at two different genders here. The risk increases 11% for every extra 10 centimeters of height, while for a woman it was actually 18% for every 10 centimeters of height. So, okay, so if we look at these and it's two separate studies, I'd say, all right, in this case, it seems that we have to tally up that cancer is more likely in taller people. So you're more likely to get cancer than I am.
But then again, we're dealing with a general indicator here.
Very much
so. And there are, of course, a number of other indicators for the risk of developing cancer.
Yeah, like if I live next door to Chernobyl.
Right, yeah. Yeah, small, shorter person smoking, taller person smoking, et cetera.
So, all right, let's look at blood clots next. And the reason why those are important is because they can potentially lead to strokes. So another study found that if you're 5'2" or under in your weight, now remember, in most of these, your weight has to be close to normal for your height. Like, you can't be either super skinny or, you know, morbidly obese and have that height. That's going to throw the calculations off. But if you're a normal weight and you're 5'2", you're 3 times less likely to get a blood clot. And this is because blood must be pumped a longer distance in taller people, which may lead to a reduced flow and an increased risk for a stroke-causing clot.
Okay, well, that makes sense. It's just
it's just physics,
plumbing,
essentially, yeah. Now, while height is associated with blood clots, a 2002 study looked at 10,000 Israeli civil servants, and it found that height was associated overall with stroke risk, not just the blood clots, but just stroke risk overall. Being taller was not good. A Scandinavian study, the Scandinavians seem to be looking into this a lot, probably because, I mean, we assume that they're taller than us, but they found that taller people are 2.5 times more likely to develop venous thromboembolism, which this collectively covers both deep vein thrombosis and pulmonary embolisms. Now, in this study, men over 5'8 were 2.57 times more likely to develop recurrent blood clots. If they were also overweight, that rose even more, up to 5.28 times. So, okay, so again, looks like we've got to put tall people on the list as being more likely to get blood clots and strokes.
Sounds like it.
Okay. Man, this isn't looking good for you, buddy. All right, what about your heart? How's your heart feeling?
Pretty good.
I have heart problems.
Yeah?
Not like major stuff, but like I had a mitral valve prolapse when I was a kid. And it's like a thing that I have to get checked up on for occasionally. It just means like one of the valves flaps differently than the other three valves. But I don't know. Let's see. Let's roll the dice. All right. Tall people are less likely to develop heart disease. All right. There you go.
Finally. Okay.
But for every 2.5 inches taller you are than someone else of your same gender, your risk of heart disease actually diminishes by 14%. So in the study that looked at this, researchers actually measured the association between DNA variants and height as well. So they weren't just like measuring people and then looking at their medical histories. They're actually looking at their DNA. And what they found was that the association between heart problems and height was actually small, but then they combined it with the overall associations that they had from other data, and they still found that genetically determined height was at risk of coronary heart disease. So before this, observational studies had basically suggested that there was a link between shorter height and coronary heart disease. So this one's a little confusing to me. I don't know, maybe it plays out in the end, like it's kind of an equalizer.
Mm-hmm.
But we got another study here that says a review of 52 separate studies. So this is one of those meta studies. It found that of more than 3 million people, the shorter ones had a 50% higher risk of deadly heart disease than tall ones. And additionally, the genes associated with being short also increases the risk of having high LDL cholesterol levels. Okay. So this isn't looking good for short people in terms of heart stuff. And one more study related to this said men who were taller than 6'1", so that's you, had a 35% lower risk of having a heart attack than men who were shorter than 5'7". Every inch a man gains subsequently results in a 2-3% decrease in heart attack risk. That's interesting. But there, as far as I could tell, there was no like speculation as to why.
Now, this is another one of those instances where I have to say that I feel like I have a warped sense of percentages and likelihood, you know, of scenarios taking place based on rolling dice in D&D and playing XCOM, where you have like a 90% hit on an alien and you end up missing, or even like a 95%.
Yeah.
like stuff like that, I feel like has kind of warped my understanding of percentiles.
Well, what if like in the in that situation, right? I mean, statisticians out there are going to be screaming at us, but
yeah.
But in that situation, if you're playing the game and the alien is at a high enough level mm-hmm. that even your 95% isn't enough to allow you to hit it, then subsequently, I mean, so if you apply this to health, then it's like if you have something like a extremely dangerous form of coronary heart disease, right? No matter what your stats are, no matter how tall you are, you're still going to roll with like a negative two.
This always reminds me of a quote from The Naked Gun,
yeah.
The old Leslie Nielsen flick.
I like to think of it as an O.J. Simpson movie. But yeah, okay.
Well, it's about the O.J. Simpson character, Nordberg.
Oh, yeah.
Where this character says, doctors say that Nordberg has a 50-50 chance of living, though there's only a 10% chance of that. So I like the percentage yeah. upon percentage and ultimately making it just completely nonsensical.
Yeah, and I mean, like, no disrespect to the people who are conducting these studies, but when you see them all lumped together like we're doing here, it mm-hmm. kind of feels like that. It feels like, for instance, like the heights are all over the place, the percentages are, there's a lot of shifting around here. And what we're doing here today is clearly not academic in any sense of the term. You know, we're not using any like statistical models to try to put all these together. We're just basically using fast and loose D&D rules.
Right. Yeah. Well, we are not trying to make an actual argument for a tall person or a shorter person's chances of survival.
Yeah.
But rather providing an overview of what some of the studies are saying.
But so far, let's recap. So Robert's more likely to get cancer, taller people.
Mm-hmm.
Taller people are more likely to have strokes and clots. Shorter people are more likely to have heart disease. All right.
Okay.
What about your lungs? Now, this was the study that got us on this track. So according to a 2015 study that was presented at the American Thoracic Society International Conference, lung transplant candidates who are about 5'3 or shorter have to actually wait a longer time for their transplants than taller candidates. And they're more likely to die within a year of waiting for such transplants. So this is interesting. I have to assume that it's because of size availability.
Yeah, I mean, this reminds us of something that came up in our cyborg, one of our cyborg episodes, just talking about the size of artificial hearts, I believe.
Yeah.
And how initially they did not have, like, they were sized for adult men, and therefore if someone was like a smaller female individual, or just someone smaller than what was the ideal male size,
they wouldn't fit.
Yeah. So
yeah.
I imagine it lines up with that.
Yeah, so they basically found that shorter adults are more likely to be placed on mechanical ventilation. And the median height that they used was 170 centimeters, or about 5.6 feet. They used a median BMI of 25.4, which I don't really know the BMIs very well, but I looked it up on a chart, and that actually qualifies as overweight. Most of their participants were white and male. That's important to remember as well, too. So, all right, lungs, sounds like shorter people are worse off.
Okay.
Brains. What about your brain?
Oh, this is a big one because it's, you know, if everything else is working, that's great. But if the brain is not functioning properly as well, then, you know, what's the point, right?
Well, it turns out that women who are 5'7 or taller are 50% less likely to die from dementia than women who are 5'1 or shorter. And this has been attributed to factors that contribute to smaller stature. Again, childhood illness, stress, and poor nutrition. So what I'm getting out of this is like height isn't necessarily all that important. But like if you're a parent, it's pretty important that you make sure your kid's eating well.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're sick, you're taking care of them, right? Men, however, who are taller than 5'10", they had a 59% lower risk of developing Alzheimer's disease than men who are shorter than 5'6". So what we're seeing here is that dementia, especially Alzheimer's disease, seems to be more likely to show up in shorter people. So that's me again. So I'm more likely to lose my mind than you are. Which sounds about right. I mean, just based on our daily, you know, interactions and how withered I am already at age 40.
Well, I feel like on this show especially, madness is always a risk.
Yes, so. It's very true. We knew what we were getting into when we signed up for it. What about diabetes? This one didn't even cross my mind.
Yeah, but of course, this is a big one. This is one of the big killers today. This is a primary health concern.
So type 2 diabetes, most of us know, is linked to weight. But they think that type 1 may actually be linked to height. Hmm. And the cause of type 1 is still unknown, but it's thought to be related to an autoimmune attack on the insulin-producing cells of our pancreas. Now, a 2002 study that was published in the Journal of Pediatrics found that taller children generally experience an increased risk for the development of type 1 diabetes, except during infancy or early adolescence. But then there's been other studies that contradict this, right? So there's another one that suggests that children with diabetes are either all similar in height or shorter than their non-diabetic peers. So this one seems to balance out in that, like, the studies don't seem to come to a conclusion one way or the other. Hmm. So I think we can just, like, we can file this under null for now.
Okay.
I don't know necessarily that you're more likely to get type 1 diabetes than I am, just based on height. Now, there's two smaller ones here that I added at the end. The first is about reproduction. Women who are taller, and again, totally, like, I don't know why they picked these numbers, but they chose 5'6" for women who are taller. Those women are less likely to develop gestational diabetes than those who are shorter at 5'2" or shorter. This is speculated to be because the genes that are related to height have an effect on their glucose tolerance. Also, a study in Thailand, which I don't know why. Look, my parents lived in Thailand for a while, but anytime I hear a study in Thailand, I'm immediately like, I don't know. A study in Thailand found that being 5'1 or taller reduces your risk of having to have a C-section. Huh. That seems to make sense to me.
Well, this one is interesting in terms of what a lot of the data said about C-sections over the years. And there are those who argue that a lot of times – I mean, C-section is a topic unto itself that we could easily devote a whole episode to. But there are those who make the charge that the decision to go the C-section is sometimes related to the culture of the hospital, the culture of the medical profession.
Yeah.
So I can't help but wonder, like, when this comes up, to what extent would this translate into an American hospital scenario?
Oh yeah.
Into, say, a Chinese hospital scenario, into areas where there's more traditional childbirth outside of a hospital, et cetera.
Huh. Yeah, that's interesting. But I guess, like, if we take the two of these and we tally them up, we can essentially say shorter people by this metric are more likely to have reproductive problems. So I'm more likely to have reproductive problems than you are, although neither of us are women. But hey, you know, it could play out in other male reproductive type problems. Mm-hmm. Last one. This one makes total sense once I read it. Heat exhaustion. So apparently the larger a person is, the more their body has the ability to get hot because the surface of their skin dissipates heat at a slower rate.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this is actually something that comes up in the episode that Joe and I did about human size, because we get into the idea of, like, giant humans.
Yeah.
And some of the problems with heat that occur when you start just proportionally building up an organism's body.
Yeah, you know, this, I can't remember when we did our episode on the science of Ant-Man. I don't think that came up, but that would be an interesting thing to think about. Like, when he's super tiny, how much heat is he dissipating when he blows up to super big and he picks up an airplane or whatever. So the idea here then is that larger people are going to dissipate heat at a slower rate, so they're more likely to get heat exhaustion, where shorter people are able to lose heat more readily, so they're less likely to get heat exhaustion.
Interesting.
I never thought about that before, but I guess that's another one in my column. So you're more likely to get exhausted in the heat than I am. Like, if you and I crash landed in the desert somewhere and there's no water and we were just walking for days, you're going to be the one to drop before me.
Okay. I'm going to depend on you to rebuild our airplane and fly us out of the desert, Flight of the Phoenix stuff.
Can totally do that. All right. This is basically our rundown. This is our rundown of physical stuff, though. Why don't we take a break? When we come back, we're going to get into personality and mental attributes.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
All right, we're back. So yeah, we've looked at some of the basic health studies out there about human height and where it falls on the healthy, less healthy scenario, your likelihood for various diseases and whatnot. But yeah, what about human height and personality and psychology? So height is a primal survival signifier. It addresses physical strength, reach, health, and good nutrition. And for this reason, it's not surprising that humans have some natural tendencies when it comes to our psychological relationship with human height. But this is one of the problems, too, because it's very – we don't want to reduce our views of other humans and our own, like, social scenarios to just, oh, who's the biggest person in this room? All right, they're in charge because they're the tallest. Like obviously – while those factors might influence us, you know, in the sort of in the background at the rat like hindbrain level, there's a lot more going on with human personalities, with just how we interact with people. Sometimes the largest person in the room need not be the person with the largest stature. It's sometimes just the person with the most personality or the most symmetrical features, yeah. or the nicest clothes. They have a reputation. There's so much more going on with how we perceive other humans than just how tall are they.
Yeah, that's certainly true. Although I've definitely encountered in like my business life, I guess, mm-hmm. that like the stereotype of like the tall guy assuming leadership or, uh-huh. or assuming confidence in a group.
Huh. Yeah, I guess I haven't had a lot of...
Not you.
Yeah, I mean, I have not assumed leadership here yet. And neither has Izzy, our tech expert
yeah,
here.
Yeah, he's taller
than me.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know if it has to do with particular business cultures.
Yeah.
Or
maybe just when you get an MBA, they put you on a rack and they stretch you out.
Or is it one of these things where a tall person gets promoted? It's kind of, it's like an attractive person getting promoted.
You know,
they're saying, oh, well, clearly it's because they're so handsome, or clearly it's because she's just really tall. There's a gut instinct to reduce it to something that has nothing to do with merit.
Rather than like, analyze your own like strengths and weaknesses in terms of a meritocracy. Yeah.
That being said, there have been times where I'll have self-doubt creeping in, and I'll be like, oh man, what if I've only gotten this far in life just because I'm a little bit tall?
Oh, no.
And if I was just a little shorter, I would have fallen into the gutter years ago.
No, that's not true.
But still, you end up thinking about these things when you start crunching some of these, at times very general studies.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I can understand that. I have this experience where I go to shows a lot, mm-hmm. or at least I used to. I don't go as much as I used to go, but I would often find myself watching a band. And then if I would get bored with the band, I would sort of pull out and pay more attention to the audience mm-hmm. and start thinking, how tall am I in comparison to everybody else in this room? And, you know, like, what's the sort of average height of fans of this particular music or uh-huh. something like that, you know? And I'm always somewhere in the middle, you know? Mm. Like, 5'9", 5'10", that's nothing special. Like, in fact, when you looked at when we looked at these studies earlier of, like, all the various organs, like, that height was neither really listed as being the tall height or the short height. It was always somewhere in between. So maybe I'm just more likely to get everything.
So speaking of getting things, one of the classic tropes, right, is that the tall guy gets the girl, or
yeah.
the tall girl gets the guy, or whatever your sort of heteronormative scenario is. Kind of that whole the cartoon scenario of the nerd on the beach with the lady, and then here comes the big, tall, muscle-bound dude, and he like, kicks sand on him and runs off with the gal.
Flex Mentallo.
Yeah. Well, I did find a study that touches on this. A 2016 University of Edinburgh study published in Genome Biology, and they conducted an analysis of the genotype of more than 13,000 human heterosexual couples. And they found that genes that determine your height also influence your choice of mate by height. So simply put, our genes can be used to predict the height of our partner. Now, there are plenty of exceptions here, of course, and we all know couples where you know one significant other is tall, the other one's short.
Yeah.
But this paper is making an argument that we do tend to gravitate towards people who are similar in their morphology.
Yes. Okay. Again, from personal experience, this absolutely lines up with just like my subjective experience with other people talking to them about mm-hmm. who they're dating or why they're dating. I know plenty of people who are tall and say like, oh, there's no way that I could date her. It just wouldn't work out. Or I know tall women who've said the same thing, like, ugh, like he's nice and all, but just like there's such a disparity between the two of us. I just can't imagine showing up
just
in public.
Just physical height.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like an immediate, like, I imagine like, you and I are totally off the market in terms of this kind of thing, but when you use like Tinder or something like uh-huh. that, like I assume height is part of the like statistics that you have to report. So I
hadn't even thought of that because certainly a headshot, you're not going to be able to tell. Most photos, you're probably not going to be able to tell.
We'll have to ask somebody in the office who uses Tinder or Grindr or something like that. But, I would assume that it would have height and weight included in there.
Well, this is an area I'd love to hear from listeners on too.
Yeah, totally.
More experience with this, especially as it plays out in the modern, you know, dating scenario.
But some people would be like, whoa, that person's 5'2". Nope, swipe. Or oh, that person's like only an inch taller than me. Or some people like to have somebody who's mm-hmm. taller than them, but only a little taller than them.
Do you think there's haggling room? Do you think they're like, 5'10's a bit much? If you can bring it down to 5'8", then we'll give it a shot.
Here's what I really think. And this is going to reveal a lot more about me and not about the study. But I have had lots of friends who have gotten excited about the prospect of hooking up with somebody who's either significantly shorter than them or significantly taller than them, but not having a relationship with that person.
Huh.
So the idea of the experience is okay, but when they're actually like searching around for a partner, mm-hmm. they're more likely to have this scenario of like, you know, figuring out the sort of math of like how they're going to line up against one
another. Okay, so it's one thing to have this fantasy in mind.
Yeah.
But it's another thing to have to think, well, where would we put things on shelves?
and
how would that work out?
Yeah.
Now, earlier you touched on the income height scenario, and there is a highly cited 2004 study from the Journal of Applied Psychology by Timothy A. Judge and Daniel M. Cable, and they did an investigation of the correlation between height and success. So, quote, the findings suggest that someone who is 6 feet tall earns on average nearly 166,000 more during a 30-year career than someone who is 5 feet 5 inches, even when controlling for gender, age, and weight. So
wow.
That's an interesting observation. But again, it's kind of problematic, I feel. You
mm-hmm.
know, when you start actually teasing it apart, is it really a situation where even in the background of cognition, someone's thinking, oh, that's a tall one. Make sure we give them a raise because they can crush me with their giant hands.
I don't know if it's that so much as that going back to that, that idea that we sort of started off the episode with, which mm-hmm. is like, well, tall people must come from at least middle class families mm-hmm. because they were able to be raised with a nutritious environment and they didn't have disease which got them to this point in life. Subsequently, they must have a history that's led them to be responsible enough to get a promotion or something. Like, I guess it would be more likely to be that, but even that seems absurd when I think about it out loud.
Yeah. Speaking of things that sound a bit absurd, there's also a 2016 study out of Ohio State University that argues, based on British data, that the taller a person is, the more likely he or she is to support conservative political positions, support a conservative party, and actually vote for conservative politicians. They found that a 1-inch increase in height increased support for the Conservative Party of Britain by 0.6% and the likelihood of voting for the party by 0.5%.
That one strikes me as very odd. I can't see any correlation.
Yeah.
Well, this is British data.
Yeah.
I wonder if the height factor has anything to do with aristocracy and certain family lines.
I guess. I mean, you're getting back to that idea that, all right, if someone is tall, that means they've had good nutrition, good genetics and access to healthcare. But that's not always the case. And then it's not like there are not like tall liberal academics and tall
pretty
liberal
sure Noam
leaning
Chomsky's
individuals.
A tall guy.
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. So this one is hard for me to really break down. And I feel like I end up thinking of individuals in my life and thinking, all right, well, here's a tall person. How do their politics line up with my politics? This one feels weird. I'm having a hard time really breaking this one down in terms of just sort of interpersonal connections.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, that one, I don't know. We have more?
Yes.
All right.
Oh, yeah. And in fact, the next one's also from Ohio State, 2016 study as well. They found that tall people have built-in advantage when it comes to spatial relations. And that visual superiority holds true even when tall people sit down and their shorter counterparts stand on a box or a stool.
like an Apple box.
Yeah. So, and this one is published in Science Advances. Yeah, so I guess I hadn't really thought about this one because if anything, I would have guessed that taller people are maybe, this is the problem with perspective. Like, I'm not good at sports or throwing things and making them go where I want them to go.
Uh-huh.
So I would have the tendency to fall into the trap of assuming this is the universal experience,
yeah.
despite the fact that there's plenty of evidence that, you know, obviously we have plenty of tall basketball players who are exceptional at throwing objects and making them go where they want them to go.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I guess too, like, the thing that I end up thinking about with this is, for instance, really tall people, taller mm-hmm. than you even. Like, for instance, my father-in-law is a pretty tall guy, and so is my brother-in-law. Like, the idea of them having like a spatial advantage seems ludicrous to me, because like whenever they have to get into like a sedan, it's like, a complete hassle. Like their head's touching the roof the whole time, or they're mm-hmm. bending their neck or something like that. So, I mean, I guess like it's a spatial advantage of terms of like, do they need to get something down off of the top of a shelf or something? But like,
yeah, or I have noticed this, that I can, there are parts of the house, like the top of the refrigerator.
Yeah.
I'm the only one who can see on the top of the refrigerator yeah. without standing on something. So I'm the only one who notices that it needs dusting.
Yeah.
So
sure.
That's like the only example of a spatial advantage that I have. And it just ties into laziness concerning the dusting of the house.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. I don't know. That's strange to me. Cause a lot of the people I know who are very tall do complain about like, well, either these chairs aren't exactly made mm-hmm. for my body type, my morphology, you know, or whatever else in the universe, you know. I imagine that there's just like a certain average height that is shot for when you're like constructing, I don't know, like a car, and how tall that goes, or particular kinds of chairs or ladders, or how tall refrigerators are.
Yeah. So I'd love to hear taller and shorter people comment on their spatial relationships when they write into us. All right. So we have one more area to discuss here, and that is the idea of a Napoleon complex.
Yeah.
Short man syndrome. You're familiar with this idea.
I am. But you know what's funny is that whenever I refer to somebody as having a Napoleon complex, I'm never referring to their actual height. It's usually more about their personality.
Huh.
Although I know that obviously the term came from the idea that Napoleon was short.
Right, yeah. I mean, that's the basic idea here, is that a shorter person is allegedly fueled by boastful, aggressive, and possessive motivations to make up their lack of physical stature. And you're mentioning that your use of it has often come down to more of a, like they're boastful and they're aggressive because there's some insecurity in
yeah regardless yeah. of whether it's height or not, they've got the Napoleon complex that leads to these characteristics. Yeah.
Okay.
But I've probably been using it wrong.
Well, no, I this is interesting, because when we come to height, well, I mean, we use it in strange ways all the time. Like
yeah.
you speak of someone like Einstein, and you might describe him as a giant. Oh, he was a giant of his time. Or you
right.
know, talk about the sciences in general, about proceeding on the backs of giants.
Mm.
So
that's interesting. Yeah.
We end up applying sort of figurative stature to individuals just on the basis of, say, their intellectual merit.
So what I think I'm getting out of this is that just like humanity in general for centuries mm-hmm. have gotten used to the idea of using height as a barometer, basically, for mm-hmm. personality and for health. But in the last century, we've really gotten to a point where healthcare has revealed that it's not necessarily the factor. There's a lot else that's going into it. But at the same time, like, our language, our culture hasn't really caught up to that yet.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a good read on what's going on here. Now, in terms of the Napoleon complex itself, the term was coined by Austrian psychologist Alfred Adler in 1908. And it's all rather absurd, because by most accounts, Napoleon, Bonaparte, the famed French leader, was 5'6 or 5'7. Perfectly normal height for the day, really a perfectly normal height for today.
Mm-hmm.
But is there any truth to any of this? Is it all just a matter of heightism? Is it just, like you said, our culture and language not quite catching up with this new balance of height and health? Is there, you know, is it just a stupid label for when a short person is aggressive, while if a tall person is acting aggressive, then it's just, hey, that's perfectly natural. Of course they are. They're tall and aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say that I never put much stock in it myself, because it's so cartoony. It literally makes me think of like a cartoon small dog yapping and jumping around. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
So I looked into it, and there are a few studies that examine the Napoleon complex. There's a 2004 study titled Personality Functioning, The Influence of Stature. And this was published in the Archives of Disease and Childhood. And it used the Wessex Growth Study, using 48 short normal and 66 control participants to tackle the question. And they found no significant effect of recruitment height or final height on the adult personality functioning assessment score, or on any of the underlying domain scores. So what they found is that socioeconomic status has the biggest effect on the total score, on employment, on education, on coping domain scores as well. So, quote, no evidence was found that stature per se significantly affected the functioning of the participants in these areas as young adults.
So, all right, something just popped in my head, which is another sort of generalism mm-hmm. that people make about Americans, I'd say, and I'm guilty of this as well. But the idea that most Americans are very uncomfortable talking about class, uh-huh. specifically socioeconomic status, and this is why, like, for instance, you have studies that show that, like, people who are metrically in the upper class think of themselves as being in the middle class, and people who are metrically in the lower class think of themselves as being in the middle class, right? Yeah. Everybody wants to be in the middle class. Mm-hmm. Maybe this is subsequently why we just keep going back to height, is because it's a lot easier to talk about, well, Robert's tall and Christian's medium size, right? Rather than saying, like, well, you know, we have a clear, like, class delineation problem, and the people who have the more money are more likely to be healthy, and that's, you know, basic human right that seems like it should extend to everybody, right?
Mm, yeah, that's a good point.
So I'm kind of curious how much that plays into it. Like, all this talk about height really seems to be avoiding the socioeconomic factor that keeps coming back in over and over and over again.
Hmm. Now, there's a 2007 study, and this came from the University of Central Lancashire, and this study actually found the reverse of the Napoleon complex. Hmm. The tall men were more likely to lose their temper than short men.
Mm-hmm.
They explored this via what they called the chopstick game, and this is kind of hilarious, in which men of different heights dueled with wooden sticks. But one of the subjects deliberately provoked the other by wrapping them across the knuckle.
Okay.
So, and in this scenario, like the knuckle wrappers here, they have been preconditioned to do this.
Okay.
So they're saying, look, we're going to have this scenario. We're going to go in there and start chopsticking around, but just whack the hell out of this guy's knuckles.
Okay.
And this was a very small study, so it wasn't like a complete battle royale.
Yeah.
But you had 10 men of average height and the same number below 5'5". And they found that the taller men were more likely to lose it over these shenanigans. Quote, the results were consistent with the view that small man syndrome is a myth.
Huh, that's fascinating. I mean, that's a really small sample study.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming it's, you know, it's only within that specific area, too. But it's interesting. I just love the idea. That's like such a farcical, like comedy waiting to happen. Like, I would love to watch like video of the proceedings where it's just like small men whacking tall men on the knuckles with chopsticks of all things.
Yeah. It seems like a strange indicator of like overall personality. To what extent you were offended by like someone essentially physically assaulting you. You're going a little too far.
I think I would just start laughing.
Yeah.
But, hey, I'm only 5'9".
All right. And then a final study here. This one came from Professor Abraham Bunk of the University of Groningen in Holland. And he argued the opposite in 2008. So the researchers questioned 100 men and 100 women in relationships about their levels of jealousy, their feelings of jealousy, and how interested they believe their partners to be in other members of the opposite sex. So this seems to be zeroing in on like one aspect of the supposed Napoleon complex, the idea that shorter men are going to be more possessive and more jealous. So they found that 5'4" men scored an average of 3.75 out of 6 on a jealousy scale.
Okay.
While men around 6'6", they scored 2.25 on the jealousy scale. Now, the female results were more complex. So you have average-heighted women. They were scoring lowest out of everybody, getting a 3 out of 6 on the jealousy scale.
Huh.
The tallest women at 6 feet, they got a 4 out of 6. And the shortest women, they scored the best of all. They got, 5 feet tall, they got 5 out of 6.
So the short women were the least likely to be jealous. They were the mm-hmm. most confident of all of these participants.
Yeah.
Man, it seems like the way to go is to be a short woman. When you look again, like back at the Japanese women who live the longest, they're, I think, if I remember correctly from the data earlier in the episode, 4'9" on average.
Yeah.
And then these ladies, very confident.
Yeah, I don't know. They said this was one of their core findings. Quote, short men were, as expected, most jealous in the presence of powerful, tall, strong, and rich potential rivals.
Hmm.
So this is not a study to, you know, govern your behavior and life choices
yeah.
on. But it's interesting in that it presents the one study that I could find that argued in favor of at least some level of Shortman syndrome or Napoleon complex.
So, okay, we've looked at the mental attributes, we've looked at the physical attributes, we've cracked all these numbers, we've thrown around metrics of height and death and rates of mortality. Now, what have we come to a conclusion on?
Well, I think we've come to the conclusion that, yes, in certain scenarios, especially with health, you can point to height as an indicator, as a partial indicator anyway,
yeah.
among many other indicators about what might happen with your body.
But on its own, I think I agree with that study that we presented at the top, that it's an unreliable predictor.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just say, well, because somebody is this tall, they're less likely to do X, Y, and Z, or they're more likely to die from A, B, and C. It just seems like what we should really be paying attention to is nutrition and socioeconomics. Those
right.
seem way more important.
Yeah. Likewise with the psychological stuff, I really like what you said earlier, that it seems like it's largely this idea that we do have some primal instincts in judging an individual by height. But those primal judgments, even though they may pop up to varying degrees in modern living, it's a far more complicated scenario now thanks to all the additional layers of human culture.
Yeah. Well, that said, I have tallied up our results.
Okay.
And you scored 3 and I scored 4.
Okay.
So I am more likely to die at a younger age than you are.
Okay.
Based on this very informal study that we've done here today. So hey guys, I'll see you when I see you.
Yeah, this means you have to do the follow-up episode after I die.
After you die.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is about how it was an unreliable predictor.
No, cuz I'm going to die first, right?
No, I'm going to die
first.
Oh,
you're
going to
die. Oh crap.
Yeah.
That means I've got to do the podcast.
Yeah, it'll be you.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And your new co-host will be 7 feet tall.
Yeah, well it's going to be a robot, so there's no telling.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. A lot of people don't know this, but Carney is very tall. They usually imagine it was like a short robot with like a mailbox for a head, but he's massive. We have to really reach up there.
Yeah, he's like the robot on that that Queen album cover that's crushing the band members in their hand. He's imposing. Yeah.
Okay. Well, if this was interesting to you and you're thinking, well, wait a minute, I'm a tall person or I'm a short person, this doesn't line up with what I thought I knew about myself, tell us your experience. You know, I'd like to know, have you experienced a Napoleon complex? Do you know about any specific physical ailments that you feel like you're more likely to have because of your stature? Let us know. The best way to do that is to reach out to us on social media, where we are on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram.
That's right. And as always, you can find us at the Mothership at stufftoblowyourmind.com. That's where you'll find all the podcast episodes. You'll find videos. You'll find blog posts, links out to those social media accounts like we mentioned. Everything's there.
And if you just want to write us a sweet, long letter the old-fashioned way, you can reach out to us at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.